Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Gravita India Limited Q1 FY23 earnings conference call hosted by Emkay Global Financial Services. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions at the end of today's presentation. Should you need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Sabri Hazarika from Emkay Global Financial Services. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of Emkay Global, I welcome you all to the Q1 FY23 post-earnings conference call of Gravita India Limited. We have with us the senior management of the company, Mr. Yogesh Malhotra, CEO and Whole-time Director, Mr. Naveen Prakash Sharma, Executive Director, and Mr. Sunil Kansal, Chief Financial Officer. Today's session will be a brief on the company's results and outlook by the management, followed by the question and answer round. Without any further delay, now I'd welcome Mr. Yogesh Malhotra for the opening comments. Over to you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Hazarika. Good afternoon, everyone. A very warm welcome to Gravita India's Q1 financial year 2023 earnings call. We have already circulated our earnings presentation, and I hope you have had the opportunity to go through the presentation, and we would be happy to take any questions afterwards. We will begin this call with a brief discussion on quarter's performance. I am pleased to report strong start to new fiscal year, with company delivering revenue from operations of approximately rupees 630 crores in Q1 financial year 2023, registering a growth of 41% on a year-to-year basis. The performance was driven by both volumes and improved realizations. Our overseas business contributed 42% to the revenues, where we enjoy better margins. We have witnessed growth in volumes of lead and aluminum, while EBITDA per ton realizations saw a significant jump in lead and plastic segment on a year-on-year basis. In terms of volume price mix, top line growth was supported by increase in both volumes and prices. Volume growth was 7% on a year-on-year basis to 31,762 metric tons. Value-added products continued to see healthy increase in its contribution and stood at 41% of total revenues. The company has delivered strong EBITDA of rupees 64.69 crores, a growth of 73% on year-on-year basis from rupees 37.40 crore in same quarter last year. EBITDA margins increased by 190 basis points to 10.29% as compared to 8.38% in quarter one last year. Margins also improved and were driven by strong contributions from the overseas business, which has better margin realizations and increased share of value-added products and economies of scale coming from increased capacities. Net profit for the period was rupees 42.52 crores compared to 21.78 crores in the same quarter last year. On the profitability front, overseas business contributed 76% of the total profits, leveraging its strength from closer proximity to procurement sites and higher operational efficiencies in the business. Out of 50 crores of other income, 48 crores was related to gain from hedging, which is part of our operational income coming from the hedging contracts, and the other part is reflected in the revenues. During the quarter, company has incurred CapEx of rupees 6 crore, which was funded through internal accruals by installing solar systems, which is expected to generate nearly 20 lakh kilowatt hour of energy per year and reduce carbon emissions by around 50 tons per year. This is in line with our vision to create a sustainable tomorrow. Thank you very much. Now I would like to open the floor for question and answers.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may enter star and one on their touchtone telephone. If your questions have been answered and you wish to withdraw yourself from the queue, you may enter star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask a question, you may enter star and one. We have the first question from the line of Rahul from Lucky Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question, sir. Three questions I had. First one is the other income that you have just kind of given a breakup of 48 crores came from because of the hedging gains that you run for your inventory. How much of this is realized and how much of this is M2M?
So everything in the hedging contracts would be M2M only. But the other part of realized is losses as against this income is realized in the actual transactions. So you see, one leg of the total transaction is the physical purchase and sales, and the other part is reflected in the other incomes.
But at the same time, it is already realized in the month of in the current month. So yes. as on 30th June, it was unrealized, but now it is realized.
Okay. Neat. So the reason I was asking this was, sir, because the gross margins that we generally report is of the order of 21-22%. That's been your average for the last few quarters.
Yeah.
But this quarter you are at 25%. So because it has moved up from 21-22 to 25%, I was just wondering if there is a M2M number here for which the losses in the inventory have still not been realized, which will be realized, losses in the turnover have not been realized. They will come in July, August maybe. But you had to realize the M2M on derivatives. So, you know, that bit has flown through into the gross margins, and that is why the gross margins are higher. That is what I'm trying to understand.
So the higher gross margins are basically for two reasons. One is, as I've already mentioned, that 72% of the total revenue profit has come from overseas businesses, which definitely gives us higher margins. At the same time, there was some arbitrage opportunity as Indian market was higher as compared to the global markets. So we took advantage of that arbitrage and bought some international scrap and then sold it in India. So that also contributed to some additional gross margins for India business as well.
So what should we take as a, you know, normal steady state gross margins for your business?
The normal steady state gross margins remain around 18 rupees, 16 to 17 rupees in lead, and 18 rupees in...
That's a EBITDA margin, 16 to 17 rupees per kg for lead.
And around 18 to 19 rupees for aluminium, and similarly for 12 to 13 rupees for plastic divisions.
In terms of gross margin, it is approximately 22%.
So we should work with 22% as gross margins broadly.
Correct.
This 25% is an abnormality which may not return, which may not come back for quarter.
This is because of some arbitrage advantage we took in this quarter specifically.
Okay. So that was the first question, sir. Second is, the volume growth seems to be far lower than what you would have yourself projected or, you know, kind of in discussion with investors, what you would have told them. So what should we look forward to here in 1.7% is almost anemic.
Yeah, so I mean, a part of it is because of certain disruptions in the Sri Lanka plant, as it was not running efficiently in the last quarter. And then some of the projects probably, like the Mundra project is not as of now completely stabilized. So hopefully in the next quarters, we would compensate for this lack of growth in this quarter itself.
But overall, we are going to achieve this 25% volume growth on an annual basis. So that's whatever we have planned, so that we are going to achieve.
So last year, let's say you had about 1 lakh tons of lead. So are we saying that at least 1.2 to 1.25 lakh tons of lead you will do this year?
Correct. In addition to 1.25 lakh.
You will do more than 1.25 lakhs.
Yeah.
But in that run rate or that visibility, you are pretty clear about, is it? Because the first, I am asking repeatedly because the first quarter has been really, really slow. That's why.
Yeah. So, I mean, on a quarter-to-quarter basis, there could be certain issues also, certain logistics issue also. Overall, our capacities have increased and some of the capacities have just came midway in the second quarter, first quarter also, like the Ghana plant increase and then Togo plant is going to come up in the next quarter, so the capacities increase are in line with the growth numbers.
Is that already visible, sir? July, first month of this quarter is already over.
Already in line with the targets.
Okay, so are we kind of doing more than now 10,000 tons a month, which is what you will require to do more than 10,000 tons?
Yes.
Okay, so that was the second. Third question, sir, on your P&L other expenses. While your volume growth is of the order of 7%, your other expenses has grown much faster, more than 50%. So if you could give us a sense of what has happened there.
Yeah, so basically one thing is this is in line with the upcoming business. So we have started some new business also, like we have started Togo also. So it's a part of that all expenses they have started, but the contribution has not yet started. And second is the expenses which is increased on account of slightly higher logistic costs. So that is on the outward logistics. So that is also part of that. So and also some part is higher fuel and power costs. So these are the three things which is denoted. But we have coverage. We are going to cover this additional expenses by economic scale and the value-added products.
Okay. I'll come back in the queue, sir, but just one final question. We talked about the lead volumes, but aluminium and plastic we didn't touch. There also you are pretty confident of growing 25-30% because, again, this quarter has been bad for both of them.
Yeah. So basically what we are saying is so 25% volume growth is on all three taking together. So lead may be approximately 20%, but the other business, plastic and aluminium, will be slightly higher. It can go up to 30%. So considering all together, the 25% volume growth will be achieved.
Okay, sir. I'll come back for more. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Dipanshu Jain from Hame Securities Limited. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. First of all, congratulations for a great set of numbers. My first question is, what is your EBITDA margin guidance for FY23? And can you please provide reasons why there is a hit on EBITDA margins on Q-on-Q basis?
So, as we already mentioned, that the EBITDA margins are higher in this quarter because of certain arbitrage opportunities that we got this quarter in domestic market. So, in going forward, the EBITDA margins are going to be in the line of 9-10% on a console basis.
Okay. And any capex plan for FY23?
Sorry?
Capex plan.
Capex for the next 3 to 4 years, we have a capex plan of around 70-80 crore each year. Both in expansion of capacities in existing plant as well as putting up new plant in the existing.
Okay.
New plant in the same segment, sir.
But there are some, because we are entering into the new verticals also, and so we are going to spend some money for bringing this new verticals also. So that capex will be additional capex of approximately 200 to 250 crores in next total in next 3 to 4 years.
Okay. So sir, can you please bifurcate this capex domestically as well as out of India?
So it is like 70%, 65-70% it is going to be in India and remaining outside India. So this is in line with the business ratio we have currently, 65% and 35% on a broadly basis, India and overseas. So that the capex will be in the same ratio.
Okay.
For the upcoming new verticals, it should be approximately reverse, 40% in India and 60% outside India.
Okay. And sir, my last question is, any revenue guidance for FY23?
So the volume guidance is similar. I mean, as we mentioned already, that we have a target. We are pretty confident of achieving the target of around 25% growth in volume terms. Revenue targets may change. I mean, it will be broadly based on the volume numbers only.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir. This is from my side.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Keshav from Raksan Investors. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
I wanted to understand the disproportionate difference between bottom line and revenues that come out of international business. So what are the enablers? Is it the labor cost, the supply chain, or the capacity utilization rates over there?
So basically, in recycling business or in scrap business, it's basically the source of procurement or the scrap availability and the cost of scrap is the key drivers. And we get cheaper scrap overseas as compared to India. That is first part, because even in India, 50% of the total scrap that we process is coming from those countries, those overseas countries. So all it includes all the logistic costs, everything else. So therefore, the landed cost of scrap in India is much higher than the landed cost of scrap in those countries. That is number one. Other than that, most of these economies, wherever we have plants, have a closer access to European and U.S. markets. That gives us additional benefits in terms of lower logistic costs also. And then there are certain tax benefits also, custom duty benefits also, when we export from these countries to the major markets, major European or American markets. So all this gives you a better EBITDA margins from our overseas business as compared to India.
And just in addition to this, that whenever we bring this scrap from overseas to India, so that also attracts the finance cost of bringing that scrap to India. So that also additional cost. So on the PAT basis, it is impacting that way also. And the second is that tax in overseas is lower because we are mostly in some of the tax-free zones we are operating. So the tax is also lower in case of overseas. So these all things makes the more margins, more profitability in overseas.
Understood. So just a follow-up to that. So with EPR coming in, and we are also projecting that the organized share would go up, so probably a consequence of EPR. So does that mean that the similar efficiency we'll start seeing in India also, maybe to not that level, but structurally, even with the same business, we might have better margins going forward 2 to 3 years forward from now?
So yeah, basically, we see a positive change going forward with this policy framework changes in India, with lot more scrap being available to the organized sector. And it has this repercussions to our overseas businesses also, because now our dependence on overseas scrap has gone down for the India business. We are increasing the capacities overseas and putting up new plants also overseas. So it has multiple impacts. So overall, we believe that going forward, profitability in India will also improve because of lower cycle and lower inventory requirements as local scrap would be utilized. And at the same time, because the scrap that we will be holding in overseas locations also, the profitability there will also increase.
Yeah, understood, sir. So secondly, on the plastic side, quarter-on-quarter, we had a sharp drop in EBITDA per ton. And as far as I understand, the plastic processing return metrics vary drastically by the region and also the geography. So for this vertical, the externalities such as sourcing cost, processing technology, be it other costs like OpEx, as well as the consensus for getting the right price on the demand side, do all these create sufficient sustainable ROICs, even in a scenario where crude goes back to where it was a couple of years back or settles much lower from where it is right now?
So basically, actually, unlike lead, in aluminum and plastic, currently we are not 100% hedged. So if there is any sudden change in prices in these segments, your profitability increase or decrease. But at constant prices, as we mentioned earlier also, rupees 12 to rupees 13 per kg margins are basically the right margins. Before that, we got some increase in the last quarter because the prices had gone up last quarter. So that was some abnormal increase in margins that we saw in aluminum also last year and in plastic also last quarter. But we have maintained that around 12 to 13 rupees per ton margins are sustainable going forward also, and that is what we have projected in our next year business plan also.
So what I mean is that one thing is the logistics side of things, and the second thing is the price you get the scrap at, right? And we look 3 to 5 years from now and crude settles back to where it was a couple of years back. So even in that basis, is the scrap also, the scrap cost, the sourcing cost, everything, does that sustainably give us this kind of margin, or we still have that vulnerability?
So there are two things here. Number one is basically slowly the secondary market in plastic or the recycling market in plastic is going away from the virgin plastic market. It's especially in the markets that we are working in US and Europe. What is happening there is that the price of secondary plastic is breaking away from the virgin plastic, and at current levels also it is selling at a premium over primary markets, because there is certain compliances that has been set there, and similar compliances are being set in India also with this EPR. So as and when the customer also is now becoming more aware, and also the companies are becoming more aware about sustainability and have set internal targets of these sustainability levels, we believe that it will break away from the virgin plastics market altogether. So the plastic prices in recycled plastic will not go down with the virgin plastics beyond a point.
Understood, sir. So I come back here.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Hemant Patel from Phoenix FinServ. Please go ahead.
Hello. We have an increase in employee cost quarter to quarter as well as YOY basis.
Yeah. So basically, as Sunilji mentioned last time also, that we are gearing up for the future. So employees generally come first and then the capacities later. So as we are going at around 25%, the setup is now for the capacities for next year also. We are adding also new verticals, as we mentioned that we have already entered we have already put up a pilot project of rubber recycling in Africa, which will be then putting up in other territories also. Similarly, we are talking about copper recycling also. We are adding capacities also. So employee cost is becoming, is going up, but it is in line with our future plans.
Okay. The next question is, our volume, all vertical volume are decreased from Q4 to Q1.
So there is certain cyclicity in this segment also. If you see last year also, the first quarter was a little lower as compared to the next three quarters. That is part of it. But coming from second quarter onwards, I think it will pick up as it generally does on year-on-year basis.
Okay, so we are maintaining our earlier guidance of 25% volume growth.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you and best wishes.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Mrinal Shah from Axanoun Investment and Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity, sir. As we know that lead is used maximum in lead acid batteries, and majorly lead acid battery is used in passenger cars, right? So going forward, the demand of lead acid batteries is going to increase at a diminishing rate due to many factors. So what are your views or thoughts on the future of lead and lead acid battery, since majority of your company's revenue comes from the processing of lead?
So first of all, we believe that the lead acid market, lead acid battery market, is going to grow at a CAGR of around 6 to 8% globally. There is not going to be any diminishing, any reduction in the growth. That is number one. And secondly, we have already set up a plan where we are reducing our overall reliance on lead recycling from current around 85% to 70 to 75% in the next 2 to 2.5 years. So we have already diversified into plastic and aluminium, and we will increase our share in these two segments. And we are also going into other verticals, as I mentioned earlier, like rubber and copper, and in future in steel, e-waste, lithium and batteries, and paper. So overall, we want not to be associated only with one product, but we want to be known as through and through recycling company basically.
Okay, thank you, sir. One more question. So what is the highest selling lead value added product currently?
So lead sheet is the highest value added product currently.
Sorry, sir?
Lead sheet.
Lead sheet. Okay. Thanks a lot for taking my question. Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Vaibhav Bajajia from Honesty and Integrity Investments. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for providing the opportunity. So, can you give me breakup of for the total capacity separately for smelting and refining in India and outside India? It's like, 2x2 box, if you can give us the capacity.
Yeah.
For lead specifically.
So the total capacity for lead we have is 168,000 tons. So this capacity includes wherever we operate. It's for the finished goods. But in some of the entities, some of the locations, we are not making the refined lead or lead alloy. So for those locations, we have considered only the remelted lead or the crude lead for as a finished goods for that capacity purpose. So, but for the India, the capacity is approximately 118,000 tons out of this 168,000 tons, and approximately 70% of the capacity is the smelting capacity for India out of this 118,000 tons.
Okay, so out of 118,000, you are saying 70% is your smelting capacity.
Smelting capacity for India.
Right, for India. And for outside India, then what would be the breakup?
Outside India, approximately out of 50,000 tons of capacity, approximately 90% you can say is the smelting capacity.
Okay. So is it, would it be, so given that we have, so basically we smelt lead outside and import for Indian operation, or we don't do that?
Yeah, so there is an opportunity sometimes when the lead prices, like in the Q1 it was there. So the lead prices in India is better than even if we pay the logistic cost of bringing that scrap to India, and even the finance cost, considering the finance cost also for bringing that scrap to India, metal to India. So then we bring that scrap to India and sell it in India after doing some value addition, of course. But sometimes when the lead prices are better in the international market, we sell it in the international market. So we have both the opportunities, so we try to optimize both the things.
Okay, got it. And in terms of the plastics business, so you said in US and Europe, the situation is that the secondary plastic is now expensive than virgin plastic, right? That's what you said earlier, right?
Yes.
So in India, is it the same or it's different in India?
In India, it's different currently. But going forward, as the EPR will be, the policy on EPR will be drafted, finalized, we believe that India will also follow on similar steps.
So then, given the fact that you expect the secondary plastic to be expensive than virgin, so basically there is no then for the end customer.
It may not be expensive than primary market. I said it will not link to the primary plastic. There will be a separate market for secondary plastic, as compared to the primary market. So there will be no linking, as which is currently there in India.
Okay.
At certain times, it may be probably, so it is a different supply and demand for both the plastics.
And then that you are saying the delinking will happen because of the responsibilities that will be imposed by the government.
There will be demand for recycled plastic because of this EPR. If the demand is higher than the supply, the prices will go up and so on and so forth. So it will not link to the primary, which is currently the case.
Okay. Understand that. But now, just slightly longer term question in the sense that the end customers is always worried about the price, right, and the cost implication associated with the procuring secondary plastic. Now, if the virgin plastic is going to suppose if the secondary plastic is always traded at a premium because of this artificial responsibilities on the consumers, so the increase in price of virgin plastic will increase the margins for secondary plastic. Would it be right to say that because our cost of processing secondary plastic has nothing to do with the oil prices or something, while virgin plastic price has everything to do with cost of oil, right?
So during the times when the fuel prices are higher, probably during those times, because cost of procurement of scrap is the major cost center. Mm. When you talk about secondary market, so it is kind of constant. You cannot go beyond a particular price because then people will stop procuring that scrap or collecting that scrap. So there is a limit. So if the fuel prices go down during those times, secondary plastic would be higher than the primary plastics. And during the times when fuel prices are up, probably during those times, because it is going to be an efficient market. As if there is too much margins, too many players will come into that secondary market also. So it will work like any other industry. There would not be any hit. So it's not necessary that if the fuel prices go up, the secondary prices for plastic will also go up. Similarly, if the fuel prices go down beyond a point, the secondary prices may not follow the fuel prices or the primary prices, plastic prices. So it will be a separate industry, catering to a separate requirement of customers, which is more from the compliances point of view, which is more from the sustainability point of view.
Got it. Understand, I think. Yeah, that's it from my side. I just said these two questions. That's it.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Manav Singh from Aurelius Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi, sir.
Hello.
I wanted to understand the demand supply scenario, domestic demand supply scenario. How much competition would be there, and what is the scrap ability? Hello.
You're talking about lead, right?
I'm talking about the scrap domestic. Lead, right?
So the domestic total demand, or you can say production, is around 1 million tons. Out of which 200,000 tons is done in terms of exports, and primary production is hardly 1.8 lakh tons, and this rest part is either by importing some refined lead and remelted lead, or through domestic scrap or imported scrap generation. So in domestic scrap scenario, the current situation is that the batteries which are generated from post-industrial, they are coming to formal sector, or institutional battery also coming to formal sector. The retail batteries are mostly going to informal sector. So this way we are finding that domestic collection from institutional or industrial sector is higher, and retail sector it is lesser. And that scenario is going to change in time to come, when we mention that this informal sector will reduce and formal sector will grow. As of now, informal is 65% and 35% is formal. And next 2-3 years, as the EPR regulation comes, that will be reversed almost. So there we see a steep growth of formal sector batteries coming, and this scrap sector will behave like that.
Okay, sir. So how much would we be doing? How much recycling how much scrap do we procure from domestic sources?
So if you talk about our current capacities, I mean 50% of the capacities are through domestic scrap, and we only cater to less than 10% of the total scrap in the domestic market. So even if we go and utilize entire capacities with the domestic segment, almost will only require us to, I mean, probably double the overall capacity requirements. So we still have to increase our capacities if we want to cater to even a substantial part of this scrap that is going to be available in domestically.
Okay, great. My second question is related to this. The same thing. Exide is also having lead recycling capacities of about 108,000 metric tons. So I wanted to understand what set us apart from them, and what's stopping Amaraja and other new players to take away market share from us.
So both actually, they are not in the business of recycling lead. They are in the business of battery making. If and when these companies are going to come in this lead recycling, would primarily be because of statutory compliances, because they have to get that much lead recycled. So if they don't find any solution in the organized sector, probably they will go and do battery recycling themselves also. But it is very difficult in the sense that the scrap is generated throughout India. It's not at one point that the scrap gets generated. So, and they have their final battery factory in one location. So for all the scrap to move to their location would be very difficult. So that is why companies like us, which have pan-India presence, which have factories all across India, are a better solution to this. So what we can do is we can collect all the batteries from all across India. We have a very good network of collection centers ourselves in India. So we can help them doing that. So even if they do it, as I mentioned earlier also, it's only 35%, so nothing of the retail sector is going to the unorganized sector, or to the organized sector. If we start collecting that sector, 1% would not be enough. We need them to put up factories also. We need to increase our capacities also, and still there would be some space left.
Okay, sir. Just last question. I wanted to understand what is the pricing mechanism in lead. We do back-to-back, I think, so that locks in our margin. But what I wanted to understand is what happens to the absolute figures. Do they fluctuate in tandem with LME, or like, could you just explain to me what happens to the absolute figures?
So basically what happens is that generally battery scrap or lead scrap sells at a percentage of LME. So if today I want to buy battery scrap, the scrap dealer would know the LME prices, and there will be a step, say around 40% or 45%, depending on which area you are buying that battery scrap from. So suppose today $2,000 is the LME. So I would get that scrap at around $800. So tomorrow if the LME goes to $2,500, that will change to $1,000. So he can sell me the scrap, I mean, linking to LME. And similarly, when I go and sell that product to the customer, there is generally a premium over LME. So depending again on which customer do you want to sell it to, whether it is to a trader or to an OEM, and what product you are selling it, generally there is a premium over LME. So therefore, you lock the margins because you buy at LME prices and then you sell at a premium over LME.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Rishikesh from Robo Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Just previously, you mentioned that you buy from LME and you are selling at LME plus premium. So with lead prices coming down, that would have a positive impact, if I'm not wrong?
No, it will not have any positive or negative impact. I mean, generally, if you are not hedged, definitely if the LME goes down, you are at a disadvantage. And if LME goes up, you tend to gain more because you are not hedged. But as in our case, we are hedged, generally the margin remains similar.
because at lower LME generally the premiums are a little higher. At higher LMEs the premium tend to come down a little. But in the end, the overall margins in between remain similar.
Okay, so if lead prices, let's say, go further down, would our realizations be impacted, right?
Yeah, but at a very, because we are hedged, so it will only have the impact on whatever we are, doing or the processing charges, which is not linked to LME. That is the only constant. So that may impact you, but it is a very small impact that is going to happen if the LME goes down further.
Yeah, realization will go down, but at the same time, scrap cost will also go down. So the gross margin will remain same.
Okay, so in that case, the revenue growth, would that be vis-a-vis the volume growth that you said 25%?
No. So what we are only targeting the volume growth. The revenue growth may go up or go down based on the metal prices.
Okay, so if the metal prices are down, revenue growth numbers term might go down, right?
Yes.
Okay. And sir, my second question was on value-added products, which is currently 40% around. So how are we looking at it in 2 to 3 years?
So in the next 2 to 3 years, we want to go up to 50% on value-added products.
Okay, got it. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Rahul from Lucky Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Sir, if you could just help us with your net debt number as of June.
So net debt is approximately 330 crores at this moment, which is slightly reduced from March 22 number, which was approximately 360 crores.
So 360 has come down to 330.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Sharan Nandikur from an investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello. Are you able to hear me?
Yeah. Please.
Yeah. So my first question is regarding this the partnership. Like Indian government has a plan to scrap the commercial vehicle, right? And they are also planning for scrap centers across India. So do you have any plan to make partnership with those scrap centers to collect the scrap from their various material like copper, steel and plastic and whatever, even the battery? So just wanted to know on that part, what is your approach?
So this collection centers will collect mainly commercial vehicles, so that they will generate battery, tire and other non-ferrous and ferrous scrap. So certainly we will get more battery from them via formal way, you can say, as of now. So we need not to go for our own scrapping center as of now. Whatever being generated in the policy battery, they have to deliver it to authorized recycling only.
Okay, sure. And about the debt, do you have any time frame by this year you will go zero debt, you'll make zero debt or something?
So we are not going to have the zero debt at this moment up to next 3-4 years. So what we are doing is the entire capex of the existing verticals we are going to fund from the internal accrual. So we are not increasing the debt for the existing verticals. But so we have kept 2-3 things in mind while going for a debt. So we have kept ourselves in the limits of net debt equity ratio should not be more than 1, and debt EBITDA should not be more than 1.5. And so these are the things which we keep ourselves, and the major part of the debt is working capital debt. So we and that is against inventory. So we don't consider that a risky debt, because that inventory is already sold and we don't have any risk. It's equivalent to cash. So it's already sold and we just need to convert into the metal and sell it and get the money back. So we are not going to make it zero, because it's a lower cost of debt. So but we are consciously taking a debt for the further expansion. So we may take some more debt if earlier we planned for a QIP, but now considering the lower price, so we are not going for that, and we can increase slightly debt whenever we have new verticals coming up. So to fund that, so we can consciously, but that should be in the limits what we mentioned.
Okay, and the QIP, I'm a new investor, sorry if this is already done, but QIP, is it still pending?
Yeah, QIP initially we planned in the last year, but now it's postponed for another 1 year. We can wait.
1 year, okay. And one last question, the India, you have only one listed company which is your competitor, that's Pondy Upside, or any other companies you have competition from?
So there is Nile also, I mean these are the two, Nile Limited also is a competitor for us in lead space.
Okay. So Nile is listed, Nile and Pondy Oxide is limited, a listed company, and there is one more company which is sizable company that is called Pilot Industries, non-listed.
Okay. Yeah, sure. And by when the lithium ion recycling will start, as already the passenger vehicles with lithium ion batteries are in the on the road, so you from when you will start the recycling?
So I think we are still waiting for some substantial volumes to start coming in terms of lithium ion batteries, because the life of lithium ion battery is around 7 to 8 years. So even if tomorrow, I mean, you start getting lithium-ion batteries in car, I mean, I'm talking about substantial, in a substantial manner, because the capex requirement for a lithium-ion battery recycling plant is huge. So you need a particular volume of these batteries to be available to you for scrap. So it will still take some time for lithium-ion battery recycling to start in India. But we are very conscious, and we are discussing with some technology partners to put up a pilot project. But currently we have our hands full with the existing verticals that we have, that is lead, aluminium and plastic. And we are also thinking of going forward in some other verticals also, as I mentioned, paper and copper overseas. So lithium ion battery is on the card, but it's not going to happen immediately. It may take 2 to 3 years.
Sure, sure. Thanks for the time and all the best.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Faisal from Hawa & Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So, sir, why have we not, you know, expanded more aggressively in the Americas and Europe, you know, where the, you know, there could be a huge opportunity for you because of the costs that, you know, which will be inherently much lesser for you than the incumbent players, and the volumes there are much more. And how are we looking at, you know, the, you know, BOPET films and BOPP, you know, recycling opportunity also? Because a lot of the BOPET and BOPP companies themselves are, you know, like Uflex, Polyplex are themselves coming into this area of recycling, so that, you know, they can supply easily to their existing clients.
So to answer your first question, I think the market in Europe and US is already saturated. And it's basically done by mostly by the battery companies themselves, because they have set up a system which is totally different with the systems that are in the developing nation. So they control the battery flow in these countries, and it's fairly mature market currently. So we're looking at other evolving or developing economies where we believe There are much better opportunities, and which are also growing at a much faster pace than Europe and US. And second thing is that slowly most of the manufacturing is moving away from Europe and US. So going forward, we believe that it is not the right areas to go into. We are looking for opportunities where growth is going to come from. That is first part. What was your second part was about the BOPP companies, etc., right?
They are also themselves getting into the recycling, because they have food safe.
So as I mentioned earlier also, that generally the quantum of change that is going to come once this EPR comes into place, whatever capacities are there in India and the way people can expand, it is going to be difficult to keep up with the opportunities available. So it doesn't matter, and there would be enough opportunities for each and every person who wants to come into recycling. The second thing is, it's not their core business, whereas recycling is our core business, and it's basically access to scrap that is more important, or access to scrap is the key factor here, which we have our strength in. Not only in India, but outside India also, we have a huge our own yards from where we procure. So that is going to be the key factor. I don't know how much strength they would have in this particular sector. And then, of course, how to recycle. Probably we are in a much better position than these companies who want to just do backward integration. And as I mentioned earlier, also mostly these companies will have single plant going and procuring from pan India basis, processing in different areas, because logistic cost is going to be a major factor also. So I think it is good that most of these companies are realizing that recycling is going to be a key factor in future, but it is not a threat to us. Basically, it will only increase the awareness, or it will also increase the market size.
And sir, what is causing you so much confidence that...
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Deepak Mehta, an investor. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, Deepakji.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Great set of numbers. Sir, my question is around, right now we have 42% of revenue from value-added products. So by 2024, what percentage you are looking for value-added products?
So we are looking at around 50% from value-added products. Actually, as more and more new plants are coming up, it takes some time for you to get it registered for value-added product, because you have to get OEM approvals also. So, because we have put up new plants in Ghana, we are putting up new plants in Senegal and Tanzania also, from where we will be supplying value-added products. It may take some time in the next 2 to 3 quarters, where we would be stagnant at around 40-42%. But once approval for these plants will come from OEMs, it will jump and go to around more than 45% in this year itself.
Okay. And what is the margin for value-added products, sir, EBIT margin?
So generally, it gives you 2 to 3% more margins after cost for these products, net of additional cost.
Okay. Thank you. Wish you best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Karan Nasli from Maximal Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and thanks for the opportunity. I just want to understand our volume target for this year of 25%, now that Q1 is behind us, and in lead we have seen 9%, aluminum 10%, and plastic negative 3%. So to achieve this 25% target, we'll have to grow significantly higher in the forthcoming 9 months. So I would assume lead would have to grow 20% plus, aluminium in the range of 35-40%, and plastics in the range of 40-45%. So if you could just speak a little bit about the challenges which we saw on a more granular level this quarter, and what makes you confident of, you know, sort of achieving these numbers over the next 9 months?
Basically there are two things. First is the total capacities that we are going to put up. Like in aluminium, there has been no increase in capacities in the last 2 quarters, but our Togo plant is coming up, from where we will increase the capacities or increase the total growth going forward. And we are also putting up capacities in Mundra for aluminium, and our plastic capacities are also going to go up. So from there, we will get some increase in the next 2 to 3 quarters. As far as on a quarter-to-quarter basis, there are many, issues or macro elements also that sometimes contribute to these things. For example, whenever there is a sudden drop or increase in metal prices or plastic prices, generally people stop buying or selling. That is one part. So there can be, they want the metals to stabilize first. So at those times, generally there is certain impact of procurement also, and sometimes on sales also. So it is not reflective of the actual market size that is available. So there generally is a brief halt in these situations. And also in India, because as I mentioned earlier, also there were certain arbitrage opportunities, which means the imported scrap was much cheaper than the Indian scrap. So we kind of stopped buying in the Indian market, and that has reduced our local procurement in Indian plants also. So that also impacted the overall volumes. But going forward, we don't see any challenge in reaching these 25% growth numbers in the future on the annual basis.
Sure, that was helpful. And if you could just help me out with how much additional capacity is coming up in aluminium, including Togo and Mundra, and the same for plastic?
So in Togo, we are putting up a capacity of around 5,000 tons per month, per year. The current capacity is for...
The current capacity for aluminium is 22,000 tons, and so other than Togo, which is coming up for 6,000 tons, we are coming up for Senegal aluminium also, which should be close to 3,000 tons, another 3,000 tons. Then we are also coming up with the Mundra facility for aluminium, where will be done for two phases of total approximately 24,000 tons for aluminium. So taking all this together, the capacity of aluminium will be more than double in next 1 year.
All right, and the same for plastic?
Plastic would be around 50% more capacities would be put up in the plants in this year itself.
So capacity of plastic is approximately 23,000 tons with the 50% capacity utilization. So for the volumes, we are increasing the capacity utilization also along with the additional capacities.
All right, so that was very helpful. Thanks a lot and good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, that was the last question, and we will now close the question queue. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you everyone for joining us today for the earnings call. We remain optimistic of the strong growth trajectory and excited about the opportunities that lie ahead of us. We hope that we have answered all your queries. Please feel free to reach us in case any of your queries remain unanswered. Thank you once again. Thanks.
Thank you, members of the management and Mr. Hazarika. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Emkay Global Financial Services, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.